ago, 24 people, including 16 high schoolers, traveled down to Puerto Rico for 9 days of service work out of this church and this this town. The trip was prompted by last September's hurricanes that crippled the island's infrastructure, destroyed local agriculture, and left many folks without homes. Even 9 months after the hurricane, Hurricane Maria went through, the damage was still evident. We worked on organic farms that had lost everything, or at the very least had lost a year's harvest. We worked in a warehouse that distributes basic needs like bottled water and rice and solar lamps and water filters. We cleaned out a lot for an elderly couple who was about ready to receive a tiny house. They had lost their entire home with the exception of one room, which they had been living in for the last 9 months without power or running water. On our last day of service, we worked with an organization called Techo, Spanish for roof. This organization uses volunteers from all over Latin America and the Caribbean to build temporary housing for folks so they can have a place to stay while they fix up their homes. In some cases, that fixing up may take several years. Personally, this was the one aspect of the trip that I was anxious about. I am at home on farms, digging in the dirt, weeding, putting up fence. And I work well in warehouses where the primary job is to pick things up and put them down. That's but the idea of building a house, even a small temporary one, is daunting for someone like me who lacks basic building skills. Now, we were all split into small groups working with Techo leaders. I was fortunate to work with Calvin Wietrich, who's a junior this year, and Rose Gladstone, who's a sophomore this year, two of our hardest workers. Our Techo leaders, Jacqueline and Sophia, Jacqueline was from Puerto Rico, Sophia was from Colombia, set us to work immediately on plumbing the walls that had been put up the day before to make sure that they stood straight. So we used levels to make sure that it was, that the walls were straight, and then we braced them on the floor. There was a problem, though, right away. Many of the walls had not been measured correctly, installed correctly the day before. Some of the walls had actually been put in the wrong place. So Calvin and Rose and I spent much of our day undoing the work that had been done the day before and making sure, with the help of Jacqueline especially, that everything was straight. By the end of the day, it was rewarding. We got to put up some roof rafters, and we did get to see progress at our place. And there were folks who poured concrete all day and got to put roofs on and walls up, and it was really quite wonderful work. But without the work of having to redo all of the previous day's work, Jacqueline joked that the house would be too temporary. And that while Techo relies on volunteers, doing good work was of the utmost importance. She said if the walls had not been fixed and plumbed straight, the roof would not be able to be attached, and the house would be unable to weather the upcoming hurricane season. But the guiding image of our passage today from Amos is a plumb line. And the plumb line is essentially a string with a weight on it. You can find them still in your local hardware stores, but essentially they're used to make walls straight. We mostly replace their work with levels today, but some folks still use them for a number of things. The Ensuring that the walls of a structure are plumb is a vital part of building. And without it, buildings are bound to fail. In our story here, the prophet Amos is from Tekoa in Judah. And he lived during the mid-8th century BCE. It says that he was a farmer of sycamore trees. And throughout the centuries, scholars have depicted Amos as a poor farmer, a shepherd, and a nipper or dresser of sycamore figs. This work of shepherding and nipping figs, which there's a certain type of fig that was produced a few thousand years ago that you had to cut in order for them to become ripe. So the work was tedious and took a long time, and land owners rarely did this work. So the idea is that Amos is a hired hand on someone else's farm, or he's a debt slave. A debt slave being someone whose family could not afford to repay a debt, so he's working off the debt. Amos, however, senses a call to prophesy against the kingdom of Israel. So he goes north. International circumstances had allowed the kingdom of Israel to attain prominence for some time during the 8th century. Two of its main rivals in the area had been in decline for several years, and Israel was thus able to extend its boundaries and increase its wealth. But Amos's pronouncement in chapter 7 states that this prominence was ill-gotten. The mighty house that Israel has built does not measure up. Throughout the book of Amos, the powerful in Israel are accused of oppression, even as they enjoy a comfortable lifestyle. The judicial system is compromised, and many have fallen into debt slavery. Scholars have argued that systematic oppression took place in the form of rent capitalism, overtaxation of the poor, and even environmental degradation due to unsustainable farming practices. Further, and perhaps one of his harshest critiques, Amos accuses the nation of torture, uncontrollable bloodlust, human trafficking, probably those taken during wartime, the murder of civilians, and the desecration of the tombs of their enemies. These are heavy, heavy indictments. The reason for this oracle in our passage today. In it, Amos proclaims that God has left Israel because Israel has not lived by the moral standards of its ancestral faith. Amaziah, the chief priest of the holy place of Bethel, asked Amos just to go away and earn his bread back in his own hometown. But Amos replies that he is no professional prophet. He's not in this business, to make money. He knows that what he has to say is not popular, but it must still be proclaimed. How humans treat other humans seems to be the chief cause of God in the book of Amos. It also seems to be the chief cause of God in many other places in our scripture, how humans treat other humans. Even in the so-called more violent times of the ancient past, God stood against bloodlust, torture, the murder of civilians, human trafficking, and the desecration of the dead. Even in times of hierarchical and patriarchal political realities, God stood against the exploitation of the poor, judicial corruption, and misuse of the land. Amos's proclamations of judgment and destruction, in my opinion, are less a matter of God smiting a nation and more a house built improperly, falling in on itself. Now, Amos has been a popular character for religious folks that advocate for the marginalized in their struggle. proclaim and work for social transformation in the name of God. The Courageous Stance for Justice, Come What May, is one of Amos's enduring legacies. Martin Luther King Jr. said that Christians should be as maladjusted as Amos to their context and speak out against injustice. That's an interesting thought, I think. The idea that our faith calls us to be maladjusted to the realities of our politics and culture. To not be comfortable with the status quo or resign ourselves to saying that it is what it is, which is one of my favorite sayings. Whether our faith calls us to live lives of examination and introspection, of advocacy when we perceive injustice. And also practical ways, maybe most importantly, practical ways. While in Puerto Rico, I was able to have a wonderful conversation with a woman named Daniela Rodriguez de Sosa, who ran one of the farms we worked at in the first day, in Aibonito, which is a mountain town in the center of the island. There are many local farmers who, before Maria, worked on their own on hillside market and CSA farms. These are small-scale farms, like 2 acres or less, and they literally are on the sides of mountains, terraced, and beautiful, with beautiful views. Small farms like these sold herbs and vegetables, along with fruits like guava, bananas, passion fruit, and soursop. Before the storm, these farmers in the central mountains would see each other regularly at farmers markets and conferences, and they talked about organizing some way to help each other out from time to time. But as things go, folks get busy with their own things, and nothing came of it. Imagine. My experience of living on a farm is that there's always something to do. So why would you give up a day or a half day to help someone else's farm when there's always something to do on your own farm? But after Maria, many of these farms were leveled. And folks needed help getting back on their feet. So Daniela organized the farmers. Currently there are a set of 8 farmers in this small area. Every Wednesday, all of the farmers go to one of their farms. And they work all day. Because sometimes you need more than 1 or 2 people to get jobs accomplished. Maybe that's clearing a new field. Maybe it's building a chicken coop. Maybe it's processing guava. The idea is that when they work together, when they are taking time to care for their fellow farmers, everyone ultimately benefits and recovers from the hurricane faster. Amos's indictment is against the nation that stands accused of greed and corruption, debt slavery, and environmental degradation. Amos's indictment is against the nation that has committed war crimes, has killed civilians, and committed torture. I wonder if any of these might apply to our country. In these last 15 years or so, we've seen politicians brought down because of corruption, predatory lending practices go unchecked, and leaky pipelines added to native lands. We've killed civilians with drone strikes and bombings under the last 3 presidents. We've held people without trial for years and committed torture. I think often our response as people of faith is to pray for an end to these things. Sometimes to confess the evil of these things, and occasionally to protest publicly against these things. These things are important, no doubt. Prayer reminds us of our need for a good life, and that God is connected to a good life. confession reminds us that we are, in a democracy, complicit in these actions. And protest aims at changing policy to end evil practices. But perhaps we could also take a lesson from Daniela. Organize, volunteer, and take care of one another. Do you know how maladjusted it would be to give up a day on your farm to go help another farmer? Perhaps even one who's selling the same things that you are at that farmer's market that you go to? These are not a lot of wealthy people with ample time to volunteer like so many of us. These are people who have come together in a small group to cooperate for the good of all. Perhaps in this moment we cannot end drone strikes or bombings, but perhaps we can coordinate a bike drive for an organization like Bikes Not Bombs that sends bicycles to war-torn areas. Perhaps we cannot in this moment remove a leaky pipeline from tribal land, but we could save up and switch to renewable energy for our homes, drive less and walk more, or carpool, or work out telecommunicating options with our work. Perhaps we cannot fix poverty in our country by next week. I'm holding out hope. But we could volunteer for the New Communities Project down in Starksboro that plants gardens and gives food away, that works with Trader Joe's and gives food away every Sunday to over 80 clients currently right now. And some of us in this church already do volunteer there. Perhaps we could restock the Little Free Pantry, which I've noticed is being used quite a bit down here in the parking lot, or work with the school system to bring the backpack program that our church has worked so hard on to Hinesburg here in the upcoming year. These may seem like small steps when compared to the hurricane-sized problems of the world. But every little step for good, every little action of support and healing provides a little tap that helps to straighten the walls of this house. Each offering of service, of advocacy, and of caring gets us a little closer to plumb. May God grant us energy and courage. May God grant us a faith that cares deeply for one another. May God help us never